Everybody, welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast, a weekly catch-up from the weekend's games and a who's who to pay attention to going forward. I'm your host, Jared Clifton, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts, Brendan Taff and Blair Perot. We're going to move fast to the big stories from Week 7 and even play a few games today, but before we get kicked off, let's check in with our coast-to-coast host. On our East Coast, Brendan Taff. Brendan, we had a question on the Rider Dynasty Twitter page that talked about DK Metcalf's amazing rundown and tackle of Buda Baker to save a pick six. And who else on the offensive side of the ball would make a good defensive player? Who do you think could make that transition to be a dominant defensive player?
Hey, what's up, guys? I'd like to see what George Kittle could do as an outside linebacker. Julio Jones has had a few chase down tackles like the one that DK had throughout his long career. But my answer here is Cam Newton at either D-end or linebacker. I think he would excel pretty much, you know, a bunch of different places on the defense. If we flip it, though, and ask the question the other way, I wonder how a player like Jamal Adams, Derwin James, or Buda Baker would do as a running back.
I think Jamal Adams would be fantastic.
Yeah.
If we're going to flip it, Tyrann Mathieu would be kind of fun to see have the ball in his hands as well. Just scrappy and
absolutely. Yeah. Honey Badger.
And on our West Coast, Blair Perot joins us. Blair, Daniel Jones' 80-yard run and subsequent untouched header into the turf, 10 yards short of the goal line, was comedic gold this week. What is your favorite sports comedic moment of all time?
Hey guys, happy to be back. That was pretty crazy. And to add even more onto it, apparently he reached the fastest speed of any quarterback the last 2 years. So while it was a little embarrassing, he did somewhat achieve something impressive as well. I would have to say if it's going to be football, I think the butt fumble is just too iconic, too classic to pass up in this opportunity. But the other one I really like going to basketball is when Dennis Rodman and Karl Malone tripped each other about 8 times running down the court, game 6 of the 98 finals, and then proceeded to just slap the hell out of each other's asses afterwards. So if we're going back a little ways and switching sports, I always loved the Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman scuffle.
So 98, that'd have been Rodman Bulls, Malone Jazz. Yeah. Didn't they play together in the Lakers for a little bit? Did they cross paths with the Lakers?
I know Malone, and I think Gary Payton jump onto that team to try to win a championship, and then they didn't make it. I don't remember if Rodman was on that team as well at the same time.
I don't think he was. I think Rodman was on the Spurs at that point.
Well, we will be here every Wednesday all season long, so let's get going on Week 8 with the Point After Report. Cam Newton got mercy benched on Sunday after an abysmal showing against the 49ers. It seemed to work out for Baker Mayfield when Kevin Stefanski effectively did the same thing to him week before. So can this be a reset point for Newton, or is the situation too far gone for Newton to be a reliable fantasy quarterback? Brendan?
No. This is who Cam is now. Heading into this year, Cam was 30th in QBR, 30th in touchdown to INT ratio, and 30th in completion percentage out of 39 qualified quarterbacks since 2016. He had an awesome fluke year where he won an MVP half a decade ago, but there's a reason why nobody wanted him for most of this offseason, and the team that eventually did sign him waited until almost July to do it. There were a ton of people doing backflips and saying, "I told you so," after a hot start this year, but if you actually look at the games, they weren't that great as you might think. He's thrown for more than 160 yards once this year, and that was against the Seahawks, who have the worst passing defense in the league. So congrats to Cam on using his athleticism to run a few in against the Dolphins and the Seahawks, but now a lot of people are going to say, well, oh, everything went south after he got sick. But even the Vegas game, which was before he got COVID, wasn't even that great. And here are his passer ratings from game one through this Sunday. 100.7, 94.6, 73.8, 51.6, 39.7. That's not in numerical order. That's week-to-week order. And then he got benched in Bill Belichick's worst home loss of his coaching career. So I've always been a huge fan of watching Cam play football. He's arguably the most fun player of his generation to do it, but this is just who he is now.
So how much of this, and it sounds like there's a little bit of spice in there, how much of this is because he's now Patriot? Just from you as a Bills fan.
To be honest, none. And I was a sort of afraid of the signing just because as a Bills fan, I didn't want to see him excel in a Pats uniform after I've been rooting for him super hard all these years. But if you actually look at who he's been his entire career, and especially these last few years, 4 or 5 years, it's just, it's undeniable, the numbers. And to be fair, the other part of it is, you know, he absolutely has a huge part of this, you know, the success or the failures of this Patriots team this year. But part of it is we made this excuse for Brady, so now we have to make it for Cam, that he has absolutely nothing to work with. I said this in the off season on the AFC East preview pod for on the Ryder Dynasty pod, but the Pats have some of the worst skill players in the league, so it's not all his fault. But a mediocre offensive line, no stud running back, N'Keal Harry looks like a bust, 34-year-old Julian Edelman and a zero at the tight end position. Bill Belichick's given him nothing, so it's not all his fault, but this is just who he is.
I agree. You know, and Bill Belichick has always made the point to have the reputation that he doesn't suffer a fool. So do you think he just kind of cuts his losses here and starts a guy like Brian Hoyer, who's more conservative, consistent, more manageable?
I think people are giving Bill Belichick a lot of credit because they've done so well over these two decades. But I think a lot of that can be attributed to Brady, and he's one of just a handful of quarterbacks where the history of the league that can cover up a lot of deficiencies. And when you turn to a guy like Cam or a guy like most other quarterbacks in the league, they won't be able to cover up those deficiencies. So now we're seeing what Bill Belichick has built with this offense, and it's just really the whole roster altogether, it's just not that great.
Yep, that's good stuff, man. So we went from discussing the possibility of a record-breaking offensive numbers in Dallas to now the Cowboys' offense being one of the worst in the NFL with massive injuries on the offensive line and Dak done for the season. What are we doing with the big fantasy names in Big D now, both in the frame of season-long and in Dynasty? And Blair, I'll let you start out. What are we doing with Ezekiel Elliott now?
I'm trying to convince myself not to panic because I do have Elliott in Dynasty. And I think this might be just a blip on the radar. He's still such a freak athlete, but he's starting to kind of pile up the red flags. He's looking bad in pass protection. He's fumbling all over the place. He's dropping passes. And you could make arguments that without Dak and with his offensive line all beat up, that this isn't entirely his fault. But that is starting to look like a number of issues. For now, I am worried about his season-long output for sure. But in Dynasty, I think I'm going to remain calm and say that he's going to bounce back next year, be still a top five running back next year. But this year, you might want to try to sell him now while his name still has some value, just for redraft, and hope that if you're trying to compete this year, hope you can get someone back that could put up better numbers at the running back position. I think if you could sell now for this year, for redraft, I would be trying to do that.
Brendan, Amari Cooper.
I think Amari's in the same boat as the kind of... He's a hold for me if you're in Dynasty League, because I guess if you're already selling at the deadline, then sell off Amari too. But Dak will be back, and he will be throwing, you know, all those same yards and touchdowns next year. If you can't get any good value, then just keep him. So that's not a bad option for next year. In redraft, though, I guess hang on to him. I don't think his production is going to get any better than it has been without Dak. So sell him if you can package him with something, but I wouldn't have high expectations for Amari for the rest of the year.
Yeah, you know, we've got three more here, and it's probably going to be kind of the same song and dance. You know, obviously we're keeping CeeDee Lamb in Dynasty, but Blair, is CeeDee Lamb startable in redraft the rest of this season?
I don't think he is. He didn't get a catch this last week, and while he still looks very impressive from a Dynasty perspective, I mean, he kind of looks like a young DeAndre Hopkins, so can't really go wrong there. I just don't think he's going to get fed. It looks like Amari might keep the same volume and consistency. I mean, obviously, slight dip. But out of the three wide receivers, Amari looks like the only viable one that I would start personally in redraft this year.
Yeah, and going to the next guy, Michael Gallup. You know, Dallas had a lot of two backfield sets last week with two wide receivers. So Michael Gallup kind of out of the picture here. They're already talking about moving guys like Everson Griffin. If Michael Gallup were to be moved here, where would be the ideal landing spot for him? Brendan?
I think everybody's first answer to this is the Packers, right? I mean, the Bucs just added Antonio Brown. The Seahawks have all kinds of weapons on their outside. The Packers have Devonta Adams, and then that's about it at the wide receiver position. And those three teams, Packers, Bucks, and The Seahawks are, you know, the head and shoulders, the top three teams in the NFC right now. So I think they are the name to add a receiver this year at the deadline.
Brendan, how would you feel about your Bills taking on Gallup? Because one thing I've noticed with the Bills this year is Diggs hasn't looked quite as good without John Brown out there, and Gallup could fulfill that deep ball, kind of stretch the field player, and maybe be mutually beneficial for Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, and Michael Gallup.
That's a really good question, and if we're going to put assets into a trade like that, I'd rather put it to improving the defensive side of the ball. Gabriel Davis has been a great surprise this year. He would have had a nice long receiving touchdown on Sunday if it weren't for an illegal formation penalty getting called off. So I would keep what we have at receiver and just trust that John Brown will get back soon. But if we're going to trade any assets, I'd rather go out and get a pass rusher or a cornerback, but something definitely on the defensive side.
And last one on the Cowboys, I kind of think Dalton Schultz's season is over. He was kind of a couple-week darling. But unless Ben DiNucci comes in for the next couple of weeks and just needs him as a safety blanket, I tend to think that his season is effectively done from a fantasy tight end perspective. But what about next year? With Blake Jarwin coming back, does Dalton Schultz have any dynasty value left? Blair?
I don't think so. I think my gut is that Blake Jarwin's going to come back and resume his starting role. And that while Dalton Schultz has looked good and serviceable, I think he's going to end up being kind of relegated back down to the tight end two range. So in Dynasty, if you could trade him, I would probably try to trade him. And if you need to, if there's someone out there, maybe like an Irv Smith or a Drew Sample, one of these younger guys who you could pick up and kind of have a dart throw at, I would prefer those guys over keeping Dalton Schultz on my roster.
It's so disappointing as a Cowboys fan. You know, it just really saw this offensive force that everyone kept telling me about. I wasn't even telling them about it. And just to see, 3 points against the football team, the Potatoes, whatever we're calling these days. Terrible.
Yeah, no, that was a pretty brutal game.
I'm going to let you guys next week talk me into either being on the 49ers side or the Bills side. So get your arguments prepared because I'm shopping this season. I'm shopping.
All right. Bills Mafia is always open.
Two fun teams there. I'm happy to try to argue that one out.
There you go. Well, there was certainly the expectation for this to be a weird year statistically, but we are on pace for 18 quarterbacks to have over 300 points this season, which according to Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN is the same number of quarterbacks that accomplished that same feat from 1989 to 2009. Does this further illustrate drafting quarterbacks late? And if so, where does that put guys like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields in our dynasty rookie draft pecking orders? Brendan?
Yeah, well, before I get into that, Tristan Cockcroft is a very difficult name to pronounce on a podcast. But to answer your question here, in a 2QB or Superflex league, there was never really going to be anyone drafted before either of those guys anyway. But yeah, our offenses are super pass heavy now, and both of those guys can use their legs as well as their arms, obviously. I watched most of Ohio State's first game this past Saturday, and I think Fields is their best running back, and he's even more impressive with his arm. I think the gap between him and Lawrence is smaller than people think, but this QB boom is more to me about the Trey Lances of, you know, every year's drafts than the Lawrences or Fields of the, you know, the next upcoming drafts. We know the tier one guys like Lawrence and Fields are going to get drafted first in rookie drafts, but now we might start to see the tier two and tier three quarterbacks go ahead of the tier one running backs and receivers.
In non-dynasty, I think it really affirms, especially if you're in one QB, I think it definitely affirms the idea of going late quarterback. In one of my redraft leagues this year, I decided I'd kind of switch it up, and I took Lamar Jackson in the third round. And this week, I'm going to start Justin Herbert over him, who I just got off waivers a couple weeks ago. So completely, not completely, but more or less wasted my third round draft pick in a redraft league. And I'm now going to go with just a rookie who looks like he's setting the league on fire.
That's a great point. And while you mentioned Herbert, he is fourth in points per game among quarterbacks for fantasy, which is very, very impressive.
You know, there was another Twitter question that came out just before we got on the air tonight from Rider Dynasty talking about Tua starting this week. And if Tua comes in and and lights the world on fire. And I think that the Miami offense is capable enough to do that. Does that push Joe Burrow, the number one overall pick, to the third best rookie quarterback this year?
Well, it obviously depends on how well Tua plays, but I do have confidence in him. I've been singing his praises all, you know, going back to the draft. I've said many times that he was my favorite quarterback in this draft. But Brian Flores is all about winning. He put Tua in because he believes they have a better chance of winning right now with Tua at quarterback than with Fitzpatrick. So I think there's a very good possibility that he does play extremely well and he does put up fantasy numbers. And yeah, I think there's a shot that Joe Burrow is the number three quarterback in a couple weeks among rookies.
And I don't have the stats in front of me right now. Maybe when you guys do, but Burrow hasn't exactly been someone to sleep on as far as fantasy goes. He's been fantastic in a number of games, not all the games, but that just shows you the firepower from this year's quarterbacks.
I think he's QB 12.
QB 12?
Yeah, I think I would still have Burrow ahead because he's, I mean, it's just sample size. So we'd have, if Tua just absolutely crushes for the last half of the year, but Burrow has come in and already looked very, very impressive. And on not exactly a great team. So that offensive line is terrible. If they could start to invest in that this offseason, I think I would still have Burrow 1A, and then I think I would move Herbert up to 1B. And I think, unless Tua just absolutely demolishes, I think he's still going to be third place for me.
Well, and probably the funnest game of the week, Cardinals edged the previously unbeaten Seahawks in overtime despite a monster game from Tyler Lockett. He had 15 catches for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. The Cards obviously put their energy into scheming DK Metcalf out of the game, but I still consider him a top 10 wide receiver for the year and probably top 5 for Dynasty. I say all that to say this. With the Seahawks having arguably the best offense in football, how deep would you be willing to stack a season-long lineup with Hawks? Would you start Russ, a healthy Chris Carson, DK, and Lockett in the same lineup, Blair?
Yeah, please. That would be amazing. So I got a question for you guys. What if you had that stack, those four players, for all 6 weeks this year, what do you think the least number of points they combined for on a week was? So the game they all busted, what do you guys think they put up? I'll tell you, it's week 4 was their worst week. All four combined, how many points do you think they put up?
76.
Oh, that's a little high.
That's a really good question.
Their worst week, they put up 60. Also, they put up 60, but 60. They're averaging 80 points combined. So they are, wow, out of four positions in half PPR, they're averaging 80 points. So I would easily take that. One bad week of 60. Their top week 3, they put up 95 and 4/10 points. So they are just demolishing as a stack, and that's only four positions. So yeah, if I got to have the number one quarterback, the number two wide receiver, the number nine running back, and the number nine wide receiver, I think I would take that all day.
Okay, Brendan, same question. What about Mahomes, CEH, Hill, and Kelsey? Stack them together?
Absolutely, yeah. My general thoughts on stacking are that those players are going to score whatever they score if they're in your lineup or somebody else's lineup. So if they're good players, I don't see any problem with starting them. Really, the only downside is if there's a Dallas situation and the quarterback gets injured. But that doesn't happen very often, and maybe it's a team like the Saints last year. They were able to survive it with Teddy. The guy I lost to in my main league's championship last year started Breeze, Kamara, Michael Thomas, and Cook, and he beat me.
So just a general question then. At what point is having too large a stack a detriment to your team?
I think when it's the Cowboys this year, apparently. 'Cause I mean,
ouch!
Yeah. I someone who invested pretty heavily in Amari and Zeke and Dak. I'm a little worried about that stack. But to the point, I think if you do have one of these top flying offenses, so yeah, the Saints, the Chiefs, the Seahawks, the Cowboys even before Dak went down, I'm not too scared about it. I think if you have one of the top offenses and you have top 10 guys at every position, sure, you're kind of setting yourself up for some down weeks here or there if everyone kind of busts, but as a whole, I think it's clearly very beneficial. You're just stacking a bunch of really good players together. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and for some reason, I don't know if it was in my head or stuff that I've read over the years, I always tried to kind of shy away from that. And one of the main reasons being obviously the bye week, but But I agree with what you guys are saying. I'll take that L in week 8 or week 10 or whatever it is if I'm going to win handily the rest of those weeks.
And honestly, fantasy is so fluky anyway that you could have a couple of your bench players pop off in that bye week and you could win anyway. You know, it's definitely not a given that you're going to lose that week unless you have super small starting lineups.
And I actually almost like to go the other direction, and I don't mind having a whole bunch of players stacked up for one bye week, even if they're on different teams, because I'll throw 1 week out the window, but then I have a slight advantage every other week if I don't have to worry about buys while my opponents do.
Well, full disclosure, Blair, because you had to throw the Cowboys out there, you're negative one next week in your 49ers versus Bill argument. So
that's all right. I had the advantage anyway, so this will just level the playing field.
Well, we're really starting to see the 2020 class bear some fruit with guys like Swift and Ayuk starting to get more involved and stud performances from CEH, Taylor, Lamb, and Jefferson almost becoming expected. Let's take a closer look on who you'd rather have long-term in what looks like a historically good rookie class. And we will start number one with CEH versus Jonathan Taylor. Brendan?
So I kind of feel like a broken record here, but it comes down to the offense for me. It's Clyde for me. He's perfectly suited for this offense. We've said it a million times. And for me, as the guy who has a share of Darnold and still thinks Darnold has a lot of talent, I'd like to see him in Indy, but that QB position over there is still very much up in the air. And I'm not turned off by Bell signing in KC because they're planning on having Damian Williams this year. And so it's CEH for me. I'm worried about the workload that JT has had already, and it's CEH.
Blair, you got CEH or Taylor?
I'm going to go Taylor here. I think we just haven't quite seen what Taylor can do yet, and I'm a little worried about Bell coming in. CEH already had issues getting into the end zone. Granted, most of them didn't seem to be his fault. It seems like every time he got into the end zone, holding penalty was called. But I just feel like we haven't quite seen the ceiling yet for Jonathan Taylor. His vision has been a little subpar. He seemed to be missing some holes, but I think he can get overcome that. And there's really nothing else on that offense. So I'm going to trust that he's going to break off a big run at some point. They're going to start realizing he's their best offensive player. And he's going to be running behind one of the best offensive lines in football. With Phillip Rivers still throwing him 5, 6, 7 targets a game, I think JT, we just haven't seen it yet. And I think he'll start to really show up for the second half of the season.
The next one is CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson. Blair, looks like you've got CeeDee Lamb here.
Yeah, wow. I mean, this is a close one. It's hard to really say who's going to be better off a small sample size and when both have looked so good. But for me, it's coming down to the fact that I just had Lamb much higher coming out of college. I had him slightly above Judy in my rankings as my wide receiver one. And he's looked exactly like I thought he would coming in. As I said earlier, compare him to a young DeAndre Hopkins. He seems to have great separation, great contested catchability, and then the run after the catch looks impressive as well. For me, he's the complete package. And while maybe he won't, I think Jefferson will do better this year, but I think long-term in Dynasty, I'd rather have CeeDee Lamb.
And Brendan, you would go with Jefferson here. How come?
Yeah, I would. And for me, it's because Jefferson is already the wide receiver one on his team. I don't see Lamb overtaking Amari right away, and Amari is still only 26 years old. I'm going to read off the highest receiving grade per PFF by a rookie through week 7 of their rookie year, obviously, since 2006. Number 5, Amari Cooper, 78.5. Michael Thomas at number 4, 80. Number 3 is Dwayne Bowe, 81. Number 2, Terry McLaurin, 83 last year. Number 1 jumps up all the way to Justin Jefferson, 90.7 PFF grade as a rookie through his first 7 weeks. He's been absolutely killing it, and he's already the top guy in his offense.
Wow, that's a good stat. I might have to go with you on that one. That's pretty impressive.
All right, stick with wide receivers. T. Higgins versus Jerry Jeudy. Brendan?
This one is Higgins for me. So Higgins was my third favorite receiver in this draft, just behind Lamb and Jeudy, and very close to Jefferson, actually. So this one comes down to quarterback situation for me, kind of like the Clyde and JT debate. And Burrow, we talked about him earlier. He's chucking it around the park. He's throwing for a ton of yards, a ton of touchdowns already. Jerry Jeudy has a very shaky quarterback situation. Drew Lock, who knows if he's the guy there? Who knows if John Elway is able to draft and develop quarterbacks? He hasn't shown it yet. The only guy he's been able to acquire on the Broncos is Peyton Manning, and he was already a Hall of Famer by that point. And basically, because of his relationship with Peyton, that's why he came to the team. But he's shown no signs of being able to draft and develop a quarterback. So I don't know if it'll ever happen. You know, you can't just say, oh, he'll get a quarterback when he leaves in free agency or when they develop one in a couple of years. Look at a guy like Allen Robinson. He's never had a good quarterback in his career. So for me, it's T. Higgins.
Blair, same for you, or you like Jeudy better?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jeudy here. I just think we're starting to – we tend to be a little too knee-jerk in terms of reacting to these young players and saying that because he hasn't done super well for the first 7 weeks that that's going to be his career trajectory. But, again, he was one I like coming out of college. His route running is insane. And really the red flag I see here is those couple of drops he's had early on. Those do concern me. But – like I said, I'm not ready to write him off just yet. I've been very impressed with Higgins. But long term, I'm going to stick with the guy who I had coming in out of college and I still think has a good career ahead of him. So I'm going to stick with Jeudy in this case.
Okay. Switching back over to running backs, we got DeAndre Swift, who has really just started to get involved in the Lions offense finally after the bye. Then Antonio Gibson, who has been, at worst, greatly consistent this year when he's been given the work. So, Blair, who are you taking?
I'm going to take Gibson here for a couple of reasons. One, no fault to DeAndre Swift, but it's just so hard to trust the Lions running back. But for Gibson himself, he's looked very impressive. Coming out of college, he had such an impressive player profile, incredible speed score, incredible 40 time, great build. And he's already started to look the part. He's put up some huge numbers, and he's put up those numbers with McKissick and Peyton Barber kind of chipping away at his productivity and taking away some of his snaps and some of his carries. But this last week, he finally got 20 carries, and he put up 128 yards and a touchdown with them. So I think this is going to be the moment where Ron Rivera finally realizes that this is by far his best running back, and we're just going to see him continue to improve for the rest of the year.
Brennan, are you sticking with Gibson or are you going with Swift?
No, I'm going with Swift here. I'm gonna take what Blair said about Jeudy and Higgins, and Swift was a lot of people's number one running back going into the draft, and then they moved him down once they saw the landing spot in Detroit. But he has been getting the chances as of late, and he is making the most of them. And I don't see why the Lions are that bad of a situation. Honestly, I think they're a much, much better situation than Washington. I don't know if Washington will get a quarterback in the foreseeable future. I don't understand the whole Dwayne Haskins situation. It's very confusing to me. Matt Stafford is able to put up a bunch of points, and if Swift becomes the number one guy, looks like he already is, I think he's going to be right there with him putting up points.
So not that it's 100% relevant, but do you guys know the last 1,000-yard rusher for the Detroit Lions?
It was like 12 years ago, right? Wasn't it? Don't they have some crazy streak of not having one in just forever?
So they had Reggie Bush in 2013. He just barely went over, I believe it was 1,003 yards. But before that is Barry Sanders. I mean, so you've had 2,000-yard rushers in, what, 25, 26 years?
Yeah, wow.
And they've had some decent ones. They really have.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Ameer Abdullah coming out. Being in California, I liked watching him at Cal. I was a little disappointed he never got an opportunity with all the concussions and everything.
I mean, really, with Washington and Detroit, we're just comparing the ineptitude between two terrible, terrible franchises.
So put together the Detroit Lions and the Washington football team, can they beat the Seahawks?
No. Close. It'll be a good game, though. It'd be like the Sunday night football game, but with the Seahawks actually winning.
Yeah, no. I think they could. They wouldn't be able to stop Galladay and Terry McLaurin.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow, that would be fun to watch. Stafford throwing to Terry McLaurin.
All right, last one. A couple wide receivers here. Chase Claypool, Brandon Ayuk. Blair?
I'm going Mapletron here. This guy has been so impressive. I know he had a bad week this week, but a couple things here. His metrics are just so insane. He's so big, so fast, so strong, and he's already starting to prove not only that he can perform as a wide receiver, but he's gained work as a runner as well. Two rushing touchdowns the previous 2 weeks before he kind of faded out a little bit this week. But watching him out there, he looks like he could be a legit number one for a long time. And we'll have to see what the Steelers can do once Big Ben moves on. But for now, I think the potential is just so much higher for Claypool.
Brennan?
It's actually Ayuk for me. We're going to split it down the middle on everyone and disagree here. I think Ben is already kind of toast. He's not throwing it downfield that much. I do like Claypool a lot, but I'm really worried about their QB situation after Ben leaves, which is, I think, soon. Either that or his production really falls off a cliff. Ayuk is averaging 16.4 yards on a decent number of targets, 7 targets. So I was dismissive of him because of his landing spot going into the year. But Kyle Shanahan is just so creative. He just creates so much open space for all of his guys. They use motion so well. They use this deception so well. It's just, it's such a fun offense to watch. And so I'm going Ayuk here.
Okay. So the reason we did this tonight, you know, that's 10 rookies. And I cannot remember the last time that I've been, and we left some guys off, but I can't remember the last time I've been so excited for rookie class. There's so many high fantasy draft picks next year. Really, really good players. It's exciting.
Yeah, this was supposed this was supposed to be a really good draft class, and so it's nice to see that it actually worked out that way. At least the initial idea is that it's starting to look that way. But yeah, no, it's very impressive.
And one thing it also did for me this year, and I kind of expected to trade more draft picks this year, being a weird year. I know there's gonna be a lot of injuries, a lot of different situations. Man, I've been extremely stingy with my draft picks because I look at this class, and maybe the class upcoming is not quite as good, but there's some good names, of course. But I'm very stingy with my draft picks now because I don't want to miss on the next Antonio Gibson or Brandon Ayuk or CEH.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, maybe the thing about that is during the draft, if you have a slow draft, you could trade down from the first, acquire a couple seconds or a second and a third, something like that, and have two shots at guys like that, because Gibson wasn't going the first round of any draft this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Ayuk, true. Claypool, Higgins, those guys were all second, third round picks. So still some value out there.
Well, it is game time at the Cover 3 Podcast, and tonight's game is called Riddle Me This. Much like Edward Nygma, a.k.a. the Riddler, tried his best to simultaneously confuse and convey his plans to the Dark Knight in Gotham, I'm going to do the same to our host tonight. I'm going to give a series of riddles connected to the player in question, and it's up to them to get it right, or I blow up Gotham General. Or they don't get a point. Whatever.
High stakes.
High stakes. So just some baseline rules, guys. You're going to get a series of 3 riddles per player. If you know the answer after the first one or the second one, tell me you lock it in. You've got a way to message me. If you get it on the first riddle, that's 3 points. Second riddle, 2 points. And if you get on the last one, that is 1 point. And I will be keeping score. And I think it's going to go towards the 49ers Bill draft next
Ooh,
week. So
extra pressure. Yeah, saving Gotham wasn't enough pressure already, huh?
All right, guys, you ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
First riddle. Born in fire, I use 2 first names, but after high school, my Division I dreams went up in flames. Next one.
Oh, man. All right, go for it. Yeah, I need another one.
All right. Riddle number 2. After a year, I found a home on the range, but my junior year departure, some found quite strange. Riddle number 3.
Yeah, I need it.
All right. Riddle number 3. In the first round, they came calling the true Yankee team, and fans are now treated to an MVP talent and a Super Bowl contending team.
These are current players?
These are all current players. All right, Blair's answer is in.
This is well done. Hey, I'm impressed. You got a little wordsmith on our hands.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
I've never claimed to be good at riddles.
All right, Brendan's answer's in.
Is this gonna be embarrassing for Brendan right now? If it's who I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Blair, you got it on the third riddle. Tell us who it is.
Oh, this is gonna be fun to say. Josh Allen. You ever heard of that guy, Brendan? Is he any good?
Josh Allen is correct. Riddler, gotcha.
That was tough. I thought I would get on the range. I was thinking like an Oklahoma or Longhorns guy, but Wyoming, throwing that in there, that was good.
Brendan, who's your answer?
So I was stuck in receivers for some reason. It must have been something that you said that ticked me off for some reason. But I said Corey Coleman. I thought he was a Giants first-round receiver. I don't know. I just threw out a name. I don't even know if he went. I thought I was thinking like Texas College. I don't know.
So I'm
ready for the next one.
I'll quickly go through the reasoning for that. So Josh Allen was born in Fireball, California. Oh. Born in Fire. Josh and Allen are both first names. He has two first names. He did not receive a Division I scholarship. Came out of high school. Attended Reedley Junior College. Strangely enough, just a fun fact, one of the assistant coaches at Reedley was married to Josh Allen's cousin. So, on the range, Wyoming Cowboys, several people were surprised that he left school early his junior year, even though he went 7th overall. And the Buffalo is the only true Yankee team. The rest of those are Jersey boys. So
It's true. I'm embarrassed.
You gotta write for Jeopardy or something. These are impressive.
Yeah.
All right, riddle number one, the next guy. My matriculation spread 3 separate schools, and my surprise rookie season broke all the rules.
I think maybe.
I'm going to send mine in, see if. But yeah, go ahead, next one.
Riddle number two. Part shifty and handsy, my game style is fun, and I have an affinity for the number 81.
Oh, I was wrong the first one.
Now I have no idea. I thought I had a little idea. Now I have no idea.
All right. Let's hear the next one.
Okay. Riddle number three. Some say I'm an injury risk because I am shorter, but I've usually had a good day when I walk home to the French Quarter. Okay. I've got Blair's answers. And I've got Brendan's answer. All right. Brendan, who was your answer?
I'm taking a wild stab and guessing that Traquan Smith is number 81. I don't know. I just picked a random Saints guy because French Quarter.
I did the same thing. I went with Emmanuel Sanders because I'm pretty sure he's in the teens, but I couldn't think of who else it might be.
Okay. The answer is Alvin Kamara.
Oh, 81 catches.
81.
81 catches, of course.
Oh,
81 catches.
Good job. Hey, that's impressive. 81
catches.
That's good.
Damn.
So he went to Alabama Hutchinson Community College in Tennessee. So his matriculation spread 3 separate schools.
I thought he only went to 2 schools.
81 passes, and then every game that he plays at the Superdome, he walks from his home in French Quarter to the stadium, and from the stadium to French Quarter. I just found that out today.
Wow.
So he can interact with the fans. Pretty cool. All right, Blair's up 1-0 right now. And number 3.
That might be how this game ends.
Defensive game. Defense wins. Championships, right? All right. Number 1. Like Leonidas, I was king of the Spartans, but a bear of a quarterback kept me from starting.
Ooh, I think I
can. Okay, I got Blair's answer in. Need another one, Brendan?
Yeah.
All right. Number 2. Twice the franchise, but never the prize. That wasn't the case in Ziggy's eyes.
Let's hear the third one.
All right, third riddle. From cases to ponder to bridge over troubled water, my name is to you like your uncle's daughter.
Jared, how are you doing this, man? Would you spend all week on this? This is these are all this is all this
can
is
you
doing.
Say that? Can you say that third one again?
Yeah. From cases to ponder to bridge over troubled water, My name is to you like your uncle's daughter.
I have no idea.
This is just making Jared look like a genius. We're going to look like a bunch of dummies coming out.
An absolute idiot.
I think I did get this one, though. I think I got it.
I had 2 weeks to prepare since we did the show last week, so.
Is it
these have gotten better.
Is it Kirk Cousins?
It is Kirk Cousins.
Oh, damn, I knew he went to Michigan State.
The cases to ponder. Wow, Case Keenum and Christian Ponder throwing those guys in. Man, impressive.
Who's your guess, Brendan?
I literally just said Teddy Bridgewater because his last name rhymes with the last thing you said.
Yeah. No, that was close.
But yeah, Kirk Cousins did go to Michigan State. I forgot about that.
Yeah, your uncle's daughter is your cousin.
And then was the Bear reference, is that RG3 went to Baylor?
RG3, yep, RG3 was from Baylor. Mm-hmm. And then Kirk Cousins got franchise tagged twice, but never got that contract from Dan Snyder. Ziggy Wilf gave it to him. All right, number four. Riddle number one. Oxford was home until 22, but just like Gates and Allen, I followed the boom. Another one?
Yeah.
Number two. My college numbers were bland, but pre-draft metrics top of the class, and currently no one has more yards per caught pass. Number three?
Yeah, number three.
Okay. Number three. I hold the record for most rookie receiving playoff yards on 7 grabs, and impressed everyone this offseason with picks of my abs.
All right.
Sent one for the last one. Let's see.
All right, Brendan, who you got?
Is it DK Metcalf?
It is DK Metcalf.
That's what I guessed for the last one. I thought I was wrong.
You both got a point on that one.
All right, glad to be on the board.
Was it the abs?
It was almost 100% the abs.
All right, player number five, riddle number one. Opposite of Steinbeck's John Ford, I went west to east, and as a 5-star recruit, I looked like a beast.
I'm going to need another one.
Okay. Brennan?
Yeah.
Okay. I cost myself greatly by not behaving in school, although some say my penalty was light given a violation so cruel.
I have a name in mind, but I'm waiting for...
Yeah, maybe.
For the third one. I just sent an answer, but I'll wait.
I was recently paid for being a dual threat Zoomer, and both my college and pro team have a close tie to Boomer.
Yeah. All right. My guess after the second one, I think, is right.
Okay. I've got Brendan's.
No, I don't think I got this one.
Brendan, who is it?
It's Joe Mixon, right?
It is Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
I think he hit a girl in a McDonald's and he went to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He did, yeah. Oh. Grapes of Wrath by Steinbeck went east to west. He went west to east. He's from California.
Man, you got literary references in here. You got, man. I should have known that too. Mixon almost went to UCLA, so I was following him as a recruit pretty closely. And I was very disappointed we didn't get him. And then he had that incident, and I wasn't quite as upset anymore.
Yeah. All right, number six. Riddle number one. From returns to catches, but mostly by carry, I took down the 27-year reign of Barry. Okay.
All right, let's hear the second one.
Riddle number two. It runs in the family, athletics, they say, from Olympics to track to winning rings with Elway.
Okay, I think I got it.
Let's hear the third one.
All right. Eighth overall, but the second to go. They likely wish they had it to do over, both Khan and Marone.
Yeah, I think I got this one on the first one.
I'm going to keep my answer on the first one, but now I don't think it's correct.
Okay. Blair, who'd you have?
I said CMC.
That is correct.
Oh.
I know. The second one really...
Who'd you have?
The second one really affirmed it for me. I know he comes from a very athletic family.
That's right.
Brendan, who'd you have?
I guess Reggie Bush.
Okay. So he set the all-time all-purpose records with 3,864 yards in a season, which beat Barry Sanders 32-50 in 1988. Ed McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey's dad, played with John Elway in Denver, won three Super Bowl rings. His mom was a track star. Uncle played college basketball, and his grandmother was an Olympic athlete. And then Leonard Fournette went fourth overall, four picks ahead of CMC. I bet you Conn and Marone wish they had that over.
CMC was one of the draft picks that I definitely whiffed on. I thought that was a complete reach at eight overall, and I was very wrong.
So were the Jaguars. So, all right, two more to go. Riddle number one. From outside Cleveland to Cincy, my Pro Bowl brother the same. I start in a bizarre season-long dating game. Hey, number two?
Yeah.
Okay, Brendan's answer's in. I'm
trying to think of what brothers.
Riddle number two. I play for one of the best at the moment, and my unique skills are a big reason. It's been a fun ride since an ankle injury cost me my first season.
Yeah, I think my first guess is correct.
Okay, Blair's got an answer in. We will do riddle number three.
That's right, though. But yeah, let's hear one more.
I once broke a record that had stood for 7 years just to lose it an hour later to my most compared peer.
Yeah, I'm not sure on this one.
Okay. Blair, who'd you have?
I thought it was one of the Watt brothers, but I'm not sure. And I really don't think it is.
It's Travis Kelce, right? He had his own dating show.
It is Travis Kelce. Yeah.
That's
catching Kelce.
Wow.
One season. Yep.
That's great. Did it work out for him?
I probably have to ask my wife. That's kind of her thing of the dating shows. So I'll ask her and see if she watched it.
I forget about the Kelce, but it's so much easier to remember like the Watts or in Seattle, the Griffins when they play the same position. I always forget that Kelce and our brothers when one's a center and one's a tight end.
Yeah, Jason Kelce. And then, of course, he missed his first season with an ankle injury and then broke Rob Gronkowski's single-season receiving yards record for a tight end. And then in the afternoon game, George Kittle bested it. So
very nice.
He held it for an hour.
What's the score right now?
Score right now is 8-6.
Ooh, okay.
8-6, Blair. 8-6, Blair.
Okay. Damn.
Gotta get one here.
All right, riddle number one. For 2 years in college, I rode a car to the show and landed up north, deep in the snow.
Ah, damn. I don't know this.
Riddle number two. My first 2 years were lacking, acting as option four on the team, but my next three seasons picked up the TD steam.
No, I'm not sure.
Number three?
Yeah,
number three.
Though just one season of 1,000 yards and 100 catches to date, my counting stats don't come cheap, but I give you production from all the time I make the leap.
I sent in a guess after the first clue, and I'm going to stick with it because I don't have anything better.
I think that last one, I might have it.
All right. Blair, who is it?
I said Devontae Adams, but I'm not 100% sure.
I guess Melvin Gordon, just because he played Wisconsin in the snow. And
it is Devontae Adams.
I know. Yeah, I know he only has one.
That makes sense. The slow start.
Yeah, only 1,000-yard season because he has like two that are 997 or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He played 2 years in Fresno State with Derek Carr. So he rode a car to the show.
Oh, there you go.
Jared, you got to write like New York Times crossword puzzles or something.
I was my first guess, and this is kind of embarrassing, because you said car. I guess Marshawn Lynch, because he used to steal the cart at Cal and just like
the cart,
just ghost ride it around the field. But oh man, that's way more impressive that it was actually referencing one of the cars. That's good work. Yeah, this just proved that Jared's by far the smartest one on this podcast.
Yep.
No. I just have more prep time. So, and then production from all the time he makes the leap, that would refer to the Lambo leap.
So, kind of gave it away for me for the Lambo leap. That was good.
All right, so here's the bonus one for the week. Technically, Brendan, you can catch up with this and be on even footing for our Bills 49ers debate next week. Riddle number one. I'm from the eastern part of a western state, and I'm just the second winner of both the Jerry Rice and Walter Payton Awards to date. Listeners can't see it, but he looks really confident right now.
Oh, ooh.
I have no idea.
Maybe. We'll see.
Okay. Riddle number two. I'm a third-generation NFL player and an All-American all 4 years, and I have the all-time record for college receiving yards in my career.
Yeah, still not sure, but maybe.
Okay. Riddle number three?
Yeah.
All right. My franchise has gone West Coast to Midwest and then back again. And we just got very close to our second Super Bowl win.
I have no idea.
No, I'm going to stick with my answer even though I'm not sure.
Okay. Brennan, you sticking with yours?
Yeah, I don't have another guess.
All right. Blair, who do you think it is?
I said Larry Fitzgerald. I'm not sure. I just know. I think he's won the Walter Payton Award, and if he hasn't, he should because he's a great guy. And then I think did the Cardinals move once and then come back? I can't remember. I'm not sure about that last clue.
Okay. Brendan?
I said the same thing. I also said Larry Fitz.
Unfortunately, both wrong, but really good logic behind those. It is Cooper Kupp.
That was going to be my last gap.
The team moving Midwest to... Okay.
I thought it was the Rams coming back.
Could have applied to the Cardinals, yeah. Cardinals have been both places. Kind of a tricky one with the Walter Payton Award. So the Walter Payton Award for FCS is basically their equivalent to the Heisman.
Mm.
And so he won that, and then he won the Jerry Rice Award, which is for the best FCS freshman.
Did he go to Eastern Washington? Is that where it was?
Yep, Eastern Washington. His dad and his granddad played in the NFL. He was an All-American all 4 years he was at Eastern Washington.
That was a college. I was trying to think of the eastern side of a western state. I was like, okay, well, it can't be the Rams or the Niners. But it's when he was in college. I see. Nice. That's tricky. I like that one.
That was a tricky one. Sorry, guys. All right, so that will do it for Riddle Me This. That was a lot of fun. I think we'll bring that back.
Yeah, just... We expect you to have this level of impressive riddles every single week.
We're just going to have to take off every other week going forward and be a bi-monthly show.
Exactly. So,
well, guys, that will wrap up our show, and we hope it's been as entertaining for you as it has been for us. Guys, why don't you leave us with your tags and where the listeners can find you, and any final thoughts? Blair?
Hey, guys. So I'm on Twitter, at Blair Perot. That's P-I-E. R-R-O-Z. Final thoughts, just keep wearing those masks. And you know what? Let's see if we can improve this segment and get some more reels on it. I really enjoyed that. That was fun.
Brendan?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at BCTaff. That's T-A-F-F-E. Don't be an ass to players on Twitter. Don't root for injuries. And wear a mask. And Jared, I am looking forward to you joining Bills Mafia next week.
Oh, right. We'll see.
All right, I'm Jared Clifton. You can find me on Twitter at UnstuckInTime82 or on RiderDynasty.com. This has been the Cover 3 Podcast brought to you by Rider Dynasty. Make sure to tune into the next Rod Pod on Friday night with J.J. Winter, Don Detweiler, and Eric Braun, as well as the Next Man Up injury report from Kyle Allen and a Devy debrief from our very own Devy Dirtbag, Ryan Bickerstaff. Follow us in the Rod Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you pod. And remember, whatever you do, do it well, and always keep the ball in front of you.